This presentation kind of summarizes the research I'm doing right now and also some that I've done in the past on Holden. And it can also be viewed as somewhat of a primer for anyone who is interested in doing research on Holden themselves. So, my name is Matthias Holzhausen. I was on long-term staff here back in 2011 and 2012 as the garbologist, but I was also working on my master's thesis while I was here, and that was about oral history. I completed that thesis in 2013, and it's titled From Company Town, Holden and Holden Village, 1937 to 1988 today. And one of my major sources of information for that was the Howe Sound Company archival collection at UW. And other sources included the Audio Archive, which has many recordings of Holden old-timers talking about their experiences. I did some personal interviews with people like Paul and Carol Hinderly, Tom Ahlstrom, Werner Jansen, all of whom are very knowledgeable and helpful. I used a lot of newspaper clippings that are preserved here and elsewhere, such as the Sherland Museum. And Larry Howard, whom probably all of you know or have heard about, is the archivist now. He was extremely helpful. Bill Phillips and Linda Jensen are both, were both kids here during the mining days. They don't come up as much as they used to because their health is failing, but they are among our best links to the mining community who are still alive. And Werner Jansen was the general manager, the only manager here for 20 years. So he knows about as much about the early village as anyone still around. I, after completing my master's thesis, I switched over to library science. I got a master's degree in that as well. And now I'm working at Central Washington University in Ellensburg, so very close by, very convenient for me, because I always want to come back here. So there are three main archival collections associated with Holden. There's the one at UW that I mentioned, which is composed of Howe Sound Company documents. There is the collection at PLU, which is almost entirely Holden Village materials. It does include some Howe Sound materials. And then there's a collection here, which is now up in the VC attic loft, very tucked away. The Howe Sound Company collection is composed of documents that were actually abandoned here at the end of the mining days. There are a lot of stories about things, surprising things that were left behind, and the more research I do on Holden, the more I find that those stories are generally true. People in the midst of a community being dissolved over the course of a few weeks must have been thinking, well, is this or that really worth the cost of transporting down lake? And the company was thinking the same thing, and they left behind a huge volume of records, which to me seems like a crime, being a historian and a librarian. It seems like sacrilege to abandon so much that's of so much value to posterity. But to them, they were engineers and record keepers, and all that mattered to them most likely was whatever was of financial value or stuff that was a personal value to one manager here or there. So they were left in an office / warehouse building up on the third level, and that's where they were found by the Lutherans in the early 60s. Fortunately, there were some people who were interested in preserving them. This gentleman here, Nigel Adams, he had been a kid here as well, and he came back partly because he was working on a doctoral dissertation about Poland. And so in collaboration with Rudy Edmund, who was the first archivist, or actually the first museum curator here, and others, they preserved those documents and eventually convinced the UW archives to take responsibility for them. They shipped all of them out in about 1968. Nigel, he wrote a dissertation which was adapted into a book on the early days of Holden, even before Howe Sound was here. It's called From Discovery to Production. And I think it's still sold in the bookstore. It's an excellent piece of history. It's very well written and very well researched. And he was actually working on a volume about the production years, but he died before he could complete that, unfortunately. Here are a few interesting things I discovered from doing research with the Howe Sound Collection. Just a few of many, many interesting things that I found out. Holden loaned miners from the Forest Service for firefighting purposes on at least a couple of occasions. Once, when they were sent to fight a fire in Stehekin, the local Forest Service supervisor wrote back to the general manager saying they were excellent firefighters. The miners here were protected from the draft during the war because they were considered vital to the war effort. And I believe that was true also during the Korean War, copper being so vital for munitions. Holden was a relatively safe mine. There were a number of people who died in the mine, but this was mostly attributed to human error because all of those accidents only claimed one life apiece. There were no massive cave-ins and fires. And also, the evidence in the records shows that it was a relatively healthy mine, insofar as mines can be healthy places to work. It was well ventilated, and the miners did not suffer from silicosis, which is a lung condition common in miners of poorly ventilated hard rock. The Holden Village Collection at PLU is less well known to me, partly because my thesis was more concerned with the mining era, but it is also very extensive. It includes correspondence written by nearly all village directors from Carol Hinterly up until 2005. As well as many other documents. This collection was sort of cobbled together over time by a number of people, including Bill Dirks and Ellen Gamrath, both of whom were archivists at one point, as well as former board members. And the PLU archivist, Chris Ringdahl, who recently retired after having that job for 50 plus years. She knew Holden very well, and she contributed her professional expertise to arranging and describing that collection. I recently went to PLU to explore that collection a bit better. They have a new archivist who has not been to Holden, but she has become very interested in learning more about that collection and possibly recataloging it.
What's her name, please?
Her name is Anna, or Anne Trammell.
Mm-hmm. Great.
The local collection is, I would say, even more hodgepodgey than those other two. The core of that collection came from the old Portal Museum building. Back in 2009, by which time management knew that remediation was coming, they decided to clear out that building. And Larry Howard sort of became the archivist at that time by virtue of having taken on the responsibility of emptying out that building. So that collection went to a few different places originally. Some of it went to the Chalet 4 basement, which was flooded, resulting in some damage to the collection. And after that, they decided to move it to somewhere a little more protected, and hence the VC attic. And that collection also includes many more recent materials. The bulk of our documentation on remediation is now up there, as well as many operations and utilities type records. I'd say that location has pros and cons. It's one of the better locations in the village to keep the materials. Obviously, it's not vulnerable to flooding there, and it's not likely to be disturbed very often. But it's way up in the attic. It's not easy to get to, especially for anybody who has any kind of disability. And most importantly, the building is not climate controlled. We don't heat it for much of the year. So those records and other materials, they, over the course of a year, will be experiencing huge range of temperatures. Not ideal. But Holden is fortunate to be in a very dry environment, which is kind of the next best thing to climate control for preservation purposes. I hope that they are eventually moved from where they are, but for the time being, it's not a bad temporary solution. Then there are a few other collections that are at least somewhat related to Holden. There are a few other collections related to Howe Sound Company, which was originally based in BC. There's a collection at UBC, which happens to be where I got my library science degree, and the Royal BC Museum, Victoria. I've looked at those collections, and they mainly concern Canadian operations. There's a big mine up in Britannia Beach. If you've ever driven up to Whistler through Squamish, you've probably driven by it. That was a Howe Sound mine, and I believe it's surviving records are preserved at one of those two locations. The Chelan Museum has at least a decent number of photos associated with Holden. Howe Sound had its down-like operations, or up-like, I guess, because it had a big dock down there. And so it employed a lot of people and was important for the town's economy. There are also private collections belonging to Bill Phillips, Linda Jensen, and possibly other former residents. As the generation of people who were kids here begins to die out, I'm sure that some other records will surface. I have been trying to track down the records of the union, but that has proven to be very difficult. I don't have much hope that they exist anymore. So far, all I've found is a copy of the locals' constitution and bylaws, which is kind of randomly in an archive in Colorado. The Howe Sound Company collection at UW, it's phenomenal, it's very extensive, but it's almost all from a managerial point of view. If I could find some union records that would help to balance it, but for the time being, that's kind of what any researcher has to work with, aside from personal recollections and memoirs. The collection at PLU is also somewhat biased in this way because it is mainly the records of the directors and managers, but we're fortunate in that we have the audio archive and books written by people who were staff members here. All of those collections could be digitized in an ideal world, but that's a very time-consuming process. And in the case of the collection here, as long as there are staffing shortages in more day-to-day areas, it's not likely that that's going to happen. That would be one of the advantages of moving our collection here to PLU, for example, because there they have the equipment to digitize the materials, and they will always have student workers to take that on. So I'm personally in favor of moving at least part of our collection here to PLU at some point in the future, unless it were to be housed in a new museum building here. And I don't know what the status is of that. I know it's part of an ongoing discussion. But it does not seem to be something that's going to happen in the immediate future.
I think there are plans and designs for that.
There
museum?
Are. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's.
I'm not quite sure why it's not moving forward. But it may. And then there's a question. In my mind, at least, to whether the collections at UW and PLU should be combined. Apparently, there was some discussion about that back in the 1990s. On one hand, it would be great to have all of the archival collections in one place, so the entire history of this valley is as accessible as possible. But on the other hand, as I found out or had illustrated to me as I was doing my research for my thesis, the two communities are largely distinct. Other than sharing the same buildings, the same environment, there's not much crossover. So you can question whether the collections associated with those two communities should be allowed to mingle.
Should be what?
Allowed to mingle.
And who pays for what's in archives? I mean, in the Senate office, we used to send our stuff to PLU, and we paid by the foot every year.
It's a good question. I'm not quite sure.
Okay. I mean, because that would affect if they were willing to digitize it.
Mm-hmm.
Why
yeah.
would they if there were no funds attached?
There are grants for those sorts of activities. To some extent, that might be covered by an archive's regular budget. But it's true, for big digitization projects, usually they need outside funds. The big opportunity represented by all these collections is that they are almost untapped for scholarship purposes. Other than myself and Nigel Adams and one or two others, nobody has made use of them for any serious history. And lastly, here are a few books that were useful to me, which I would recommend to anyone who's interested in history of Holden or company towns in general. Any questions?
I just have a comment. I think that that was interesting, really interesting, and great sort of a research base for where is all the old stuff from the mine in Holden? Where is that going and why? Why have it? What's the import of it? And I think one comment that I have is stories about Holden are so critical, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody carries these stories you sit down at the dining table and you're bound to hear a story of the old days or last week, and that someday will be the old days, right? The cougar that someone saw walking up, or the flood that almost took, you know, such and such out. So I think there's great value in history, and the My Museum is going to happen. My understanding is there's all sorts of plans, funding, and combination of efforts with the mine company. Do you know much about that? And Holden, there will be three parts to the mine.
I know a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'd be interested
basically
in hearing
just
what you know.
Larry Howard is holding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Larry Howard?
Yeah, he or Josh Post would be more knowledgeable people if we were at that.
Yeah, the old mine museum was so interesting. I mean, it had so much, even as a kid, to see what was and what is and what will be, right? To know our past, we can know who we are now and where we're headed, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that. That's very, very interesting. Do you see any major things in your studies that would be helpful to move that effort along, to preserve the past? Digitalizing, you said that. Anything else?
I think just being aware of what's out there is the most important thing. If you don't know that a collection exists, how can you care about it? And as I've done this research, it's become clear to me that many people know a lot about certain parts of Holden history, or know a lot about some of these collections. Not that many people know that all of them exist.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know about most of this until a couple of months ago, even though I had done a thesis on Holden.
Interesting. I'm really curious about your conversations with the two folks you mentioned who grew up as little kids in Winston. What were some of the things that you heard from them about what life was like here?
Well, they loved it here.
Linda was here this summer.
Was she?
Yeah.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. She has some challenges, but she did just fine. Yeah.
Are these people who lived here when the mine was here?
Yes. They were here as kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lots of stories.
Yeah, they were both teenagers, I think, when the place shut down. They have nothing but positive things to say about home.
Did any of those interviews, like, get recorded, or what was your research?
Linda Jensen is on the archive,
mm-hmm.
The audio archive. You can look her up.
At least a couple of interviews by her and Bill Phillips, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I haven't looked him up.
Yeah, Linda has some interesting stories, having gone on her tour a couple times into Winston.
Cool.
And talked with her. She and my mom, Ellen Gamrath, have worked a lot about, you know, what kind of things are you finding in your garage that you might put into records, but then also other things that were in the hotel attic. There was a whole bunch of stuff stored up there, little tiny cream pitchers and many physical things that were just slammed up there with the mice, lots of mice because of neglect. But Linda's stories are amazing. She was a young child here. Her dad actually had a heart attack and died here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you know more about this than I do, so please, I'm not a historian. I just love Holden, so.
That's right. They left after her father died.
And her mother had to make ends meet. Because it wasn't associated with a mine accident, there was no compensation for their family. So her mother worked in the snack bar, which at that time was the grill. These are all stories from Linda.
Yeah.
Where the single guys would typically go down and grab something in the mining days. And she has her front stoop down there as you're walking towards the trail junction. She had some people move it to a place where she could go by and see it every time she walked by. But I think it was a little bit of a hard time because her mother was a single woman trying to raise a family. And then also, the other thing Linda said, which was interesting, I think they did love it, but like any community, I said, oh, Linda, what about that pool that's up? You know, you've seen the pool that's filled with rocks up behind.
11 and 12.
Thank you, 11 and 12. Yeah, there's a cement pond, basically. Mm-hmm. With you can see the ladders going in. That's the pool. I said, did you used to swim in that? And she said, oh, no, that was for the town kids.
Mm-hmm.
And she was not a town kid.
Interesting.
And I thought, that sheds light on
the
whole.
There was a little bit of a hierarchy. You're at the top are the people who live what we call the chalets.
Mm-hmm. Management.
Management, top engineers, office people, yeah. And then Winston and Hyman Heights would be next, and then the guys in the dorms would be kind of at the bottom of the barrel. But, you know, in the Depression, anybody who had a job up here was probably grateful for it, and the pay was above average for miners in the U.S. at the time.
Another thing that happened to Linda's mom was she had managed the
lunch counter.
And so then when they had to leave and she was looking for work, the state or whoever wanted her to take a waitress job. And she's like, get little on that, because she had been paid well.
Oh, interesting.
When she worked here, it wasn't.
Her unemployment benefits were better than what she could have made as a waitress on the outside, because sometimes it's here.
And who was the other person? You said there were two people, Linda and...
Bill Phillips, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he inherited most of Nigel Adams' notes and photos. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen his collection, but I imagine it's pretty extensive as well.
Linda has mentioned many times that she's so grateful for Holland Village because there were a lot of mining company towns that don't exist anymore. She can still come home. Mm-hmm. Most of the other people can't. Mm-hmm. So she's very grateful about that.
I think Holden is truly unique in that regard. It went through its ghost town phase and then came back to life. That doesn't happen to other ghost towns. They just disappear. And if it had been left here a bit longer, I imagine the Forest Service would have leveled it. That's what they did to Winston, because it was considered a fire hazard. So West Creek came along in the nick of time.
Yes.
Is your MA thesis available in the library here?
There's a copy up in the archives. I'm not sure why it's buried up there, but it is online. I can give you the link if you're interested.
Yeah. I would love that too.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. Be interesting to look at.
Any other questions? Well, thank you all for coming. Mm-hmm. Thank you.